Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network, and we Blog Talk has had some technical difficulties. Today is November 6th, so we apologize for not being on right at the top of the hour. We are still having technical difficulties, but we were able to get through this far. Thank you for listening. Thank you for holding on. But we can't get to the switchboard in order to let you speak. And this is an interactive show we had planned for you tonight. So check our website, blacksummit.org, or our Facebook page, and we will update you as things move ahead. If you don't hear from us, we will be on next Sunday, which will be November 13th, at our regular scheduled time, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern time. And just so that you can be in the declaration, I'll recite the declaration of the International Black Summit for us, and we will continue to work out this situation. The declaration of the International Black Summit: we declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There is nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, responsible for our communities, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We assert that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. October 7th, 1991, Atlanta, Georgia. November 6, 2011, Chicago, Illinois. A moment of silence, please. Thank you. And we will contact you by email, Facebook, our webpage, blacksummit.org. If you would just go there, we will keep you updated as to when we will reschedule this show. Send us an email or let us know that you got this message. Thank you. BlackSummit.org.
Good evening, good evening. How are you?
Hello.
Hello, how are you? How are you? This is the International Black Summit radio show. We have our host team. We have Jerry on the call. I believe it's Henrietta out there.
Yes, it is. Okay.
I'm here.
Okay. Hi, Henrietta. How are you?
Hi, Gio. Hi, Jerry.
Hello.
Well, we want to, first of all, want to acknowledge everyone that had called in earlier. We have found out that the problem was in regards to the time change. So with that in mind, we are going to go ahead and proceed with our show. And as you all may or may not know, the topic of the show for the rest of this month will be cancer awareness, diagnosis, diet, support, and support required, and sharing. So we're going to have a really good show. We are going to reschedule this show, but we still want to talk about some of the things that some of the research that has been brought up. But we are going to reschedule because we have some people, some guests that wanted to share in regards to the show and want to share their information. But we're going to go ahead as we do with at the beginning of every show, and that is we announce the declaration of the International Black Summit, which I will do right now. The declaration of the International Black Summit. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There is nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7th, 1991. Atlanta, Georgia, November, what is it, Jerry, the 5th or the 6th?
6th.
November 2011, north, south, east, west, above and below. Moment of silence, please. Thank you. So anyone that's out there right now, if you have anything going on in the background, we ask that you mute your phone. We can hear everything that's going on. Please mute your phone. Okay, so Jerry, how are you? Jerry, are you out there? All right, we'll get back with Jerry. We just want you to know that the purpose of the International Black Summit is to provide an opportunity for participants to bring into being their vision for the black community and the world. You can find information about the Black Summit at www.blacksummit.org. And another little tidbit, the International Black Summit is a conversation being given by life to the world through people of black African descent. This is a powerful conversation. It's a powerful nonprofit organization, and we would love for you to check us out. You can go to the website or you can go to Facebook. And we do have an annual inquiry, and the inquiry for this year, for 2011-2012, is what is possible in life when I be with what is? What is the gift? And what we do on the show is no matter what the topic is, we want you to find yourself. How do you fit in to the declaration of the International Black Summit? We usually have a Kwanzaa principle that is set up. And if Jerry is on the air, we want to hear the Kwanzaa principle. Jerry, are you on the air?
Yes, I am. And I got two good ones for tonight that really going to fit the show. And the first one, Nkuzha Shakaria, and that's the parentheses, we self-determination, to define ourselves, name ourselves, create for ourselves, and to speak for ourselves. And the second one is Nia, in parentheses means purpose, to make our collective vocation and development of our community in order to restore our people to their traditional greatness. And back into my system.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. What we're going to do this evening is we're going to talk about, since Jerry, we have Jerry on the air, and Jerry, I'm not sure if he's ready to discuss his connection as far as a family member with cancer. We do want to share with our listening audience the aspect of being family support, being a family support for the person in your household, in your family that is dealing with cancer, whether it's stages 1, 2, 3, or 4. And we are not just talking about breast cancer. We acknowledged breast cancer last month, which was the month for breast cancer. We are talking for the month of November, all cancers. So with that in mind, this show, we're going to talk a little bit about the support. And we understand that there is, you want to help, you're there to help, and it can become stressful. So we don't want to sugarcoat that as well. And also remind everyone that there is support in your community as far as support groups that can assist you. Jay, would you please share your story in regards to family support with a family member that you had to work with in regards to them having cancer?
Well, first and foremost, my mother, she called me in back in 1993. I forgot which month it was. And she let us know that my grandma had cancer. And at the same time, my aunt had cancer too, but she passed away in 98, but I get a little back a little later. So what happened was, it was like an emotional shock.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
each of us had to like really chip in to help my moms, and even like my aunt was like coming back and forth from North Carolina, New York, and plus she was suffering too of cancer. And so each of us had to really chip in, you know, talk to her and you know, find out, you know, what's the, because she had lung cancer. And then, you know, it was at that night, you know, I was doing like, you know, study about it. That was like one of the number one killers of us African Americans back in the night.
Mm-hmm.
So, to me, I know all I could talk for me that I was always asked her, you know, how she breathing and how she feels, how fatigued she was, and basically it's like from 94 to up to her death in 96, she was bad. She really was really in the bed.
Mm-hmm,
and so
mm-hmm.
when we see a person that is strong for years and just suffer like that, it really takes, you know, everybody say, oh, it takes a toll, but it really takes a toll. And then at the same time, my mother needs support too, and my aunt. See, we have to deal with that too. And so for me, It was educational, but at the same time, it's very emotional. And I learned more about African Americans. We need to take care of ourselves. We need to teach us how to feel certain things in our body. If you feel a little funny thing in your throat or whatever, go straight to the doctor. What happened was my grandma was misdiagnosed. And
okay.
So we, you know, it takes a toll. You know, when people say it doesn't take a toll on the family, it really does. Because at times when we talk about cancer, I think about my grandmother. And also I think about my aunt, because she passed away in 98. And that's like within a year and a half.
Wow.
So
okay.
You go through that, then bam, again.
Right.
And so all I can tell people is, you know, when a family member is in cancer, be more understanding. You know, that sometimes, you know, they go through these swing moves. Understand that they suffering too. And sometimes they don't want to see you, you know, mope around stuff. And all I can say, and do research. You know, get the family together. And that's my That's my, you know, that's what I want to put out there. Back at you.
Well, thank you, Jerry. Thank you for sharing. And we do have some hands raised. We have a 708-646. Let's see. Yes, 708-646. You're live on the air. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Good evening. Hi, this is Karen.
Hi, Karen. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful this evening. How are you?
Good, thank you. Good, thank you. Welcome to the show, International Black Summit. And do you have a comment or a story you would like to share with us and our viewers?
Well, yes. Reverend Byrd asked me to call in this evening. I am a 5-year survivor of breast cancer.
Wow, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Yeah, she wanted me to just share, like, my diagnosis and diet support and other things.
Yes, please do. Please do. Please do. Go ahead.
Okay. I was originally diagnosed in December of 05 with stage 0 breast cancer. And when it was originally, when I got the news, first it was, of course, it was disbelief. You know, there was a mistake. Nobody in my family had it. So, you know, of course, this is a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So then I just had to accept the fact that I was diagnosed with this, but I didn't accept it as a death sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately I had decided that I was going to be a survivor.
Right.
Yeah, so as I went through all of my tests, and it was kind of revealed to me that I needed one or both breasts removed, but only one breast had some mass in it, so I opted to just have the one breast removed and to have a reconstruction.
Wow. So... I've heard for, I was doing a breast cancer awareness walk, which is by choice, and I was talking to a couple of the women, and at one couple of women that were talking with me stated that even though they found the cancer in one breast, they decided to have the they decided to have both breasts removed. Did you know of other survivors that have opted for that?
Yes, I went after my surgery. I did join a breast cancer support group out in the southern suburbs, and there was quite a few women there that opted to have both breasts removed.
Okay.
My decision was because there was only masses in the one breast.
Mm.
And I said, well, you know, God is good, God is great. I'm glad I caught this one. There's no sense in me in foreseeing that something's going to happen to my other one. So
mm-hmm.
that was just my personal decision just to have the one breast removed.
Okay. We also have connected with Henrietta Byrd, 312-5939. You're also live on the air. Could you please share with us the diet? You mentioned diet. Did your diet change?
Well, yes, of course. I was very small, and I was very unhealthy in essence. I was underweight, you know. I didn't like eating, per se. I was really just eating to survive, not necessarily eating the correct things. So once I was diagnosed, I had made up in my mind that I was going to come out of the surgery. And so definitely I instantly changed my diet and started eating a lot more healthier than I was in the past. I started walking, doing a little exercise. But the most important thing, I think, was to get the education about the surgery I was opted to receive. So I, one of the nurses She gave me the information for this book, Dr. Susan Love's Breast Book. And I purchased the book, and I just really just got, myself informed on the diagnosis and, the survival rate and what's really going to happen to me as I go through the surgery and my recovery. So I just made it up in my mind that I was going to recover and I was going to do whatever I needed to do to recover. And I just also decided that I didn't want negative people around me. If you could support mm-hmm. me, then you just go on your merry way.
That's right. So your mindset played a huge part in your recovery, it sounds.
Yes, it did. My boyfriend, when I told him originally of my diagnosis, he kind of balked and, was like, I can't really handle this. And I'm like, okay, bye-bye. Because I have no choice but to handle this, And as he seemed that I wasn't really, falling apart, then he came back and supported me through the surgery. But my mom was there, my son was there. And I just opted not to tell a lot of people until after my surgery.
And so you said your son was there and your mother was there, and apparently
yeah.
It sounds like you had great support. Can you share with us for viewers that are going through what you went through in regards to what it was like telling your child and how old was your child at the time, if you don't mind me asking, and how did this affect your child?
Well, my mother and my son, I actually both was very upset about it. My son, in essence, he was, of course, he's thinking, he's going to lose his mom. So whatever I needed, he was there. All of my appointments, you have to go, and get biopsies and MRIs and, back and forth to the surgeon and this and that. All of my appointments, I have to say my mother, my son, and my boyfriend was there with me. So I did, in essence, have great support on that end. I come from a large family. I chose not to share with my brothers and sisters until after the surgery or right before the surgery. I told them that I was going to have it. I just didn't want to have to deal with this, oh, my God, you're going to die.
No, because
I'm not going to die. So, I don't need that negativity.
That's right. This is a great conversation. I want to see if Henrietta wants to pop in. Henrietta, do you have anything you would like to ask or share?
Yes, I do. Karen, thank you so much for calling in and calling back. And also, for those people listening, this is the International Black Summit Touch Structural Network, and our topic tonight and the entire month of November is cancer awareness. And we're speaking with a five-year cancer survivor. Karen, thanks again for calling. A couple of questions I would like to ask, because you are definitely the exception to the rule, and we want, our goal is to have more people be exceptions to the rule, where they decide they're going to live, and that it's not a death sentence. I was listening to you, to your story about being in disbelief when you first got the diagnosis, and you said you immediately made the decision to be a survivor. Like immediate,
yes.
Like there was no other option for you. And I like that. I I like that. And I guess I just wanted to ask how long did that take? Like from the disbelief stage to the survivor stage?
Well, I think it was immediate, honestly, because when I was in the room with the surgeon and, you know, she told me the diagnosis and I just said, yes, okay. And she said, uh-huh. No, I honestly, you didn't understand what I said. I said, no, I understood exactly what you said. But I guess at that point it was the whole disbelief. And then I thought, I'm going to beat this, you know, are you kidding? Yeah. You know, and so, of course, I went home, and for about a week, I just wrestled with the, you know, why me, you know. And I'm like, you know what, this is your story. Hey, and you got to live in order to tell it. So do what you got to do to come on a part of this. And so that was just the attitude that I took.
And I'm so glad you did. I am so glad. So glad that you did.
But, you know, I guess I think something that I just really want to share is that, you know, for me, getting breast cancer wasn't a death sentence. It really, really, really changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I am such a different person than I was prior to. That is just unbelievable.
Can you say a little bit more about that?
Well, I mean, I love myself.
Mm-hmm.
I have let go all of the anger to, you know, shoulda, woulda, couldas, and what people have done to me. I've let go all of that and just forgive myself, forgive them, and just moving forward and trying to develop different friendships with people that before, you know, I just had a lot of anger and animosity toward. My body is healthier, you know, than it was before. And I feel happy to just be living, you know, and just being able to share. I love to teach, you know, and I just feel this is my story. And, you know, I'm on this spiritual unfoldment, and this is just part of my journey, and I just accept it and embrace it.
So when you say that you love yourself now, are you saying that before you had this diagnosis that wasn't you didn't really love yourself before then?
Well, I think before I was just more selfish. Me.
Okay.
You know, if it ain't about me, then you know, you get out of my way and this and that and the other. It was just, you know, now I think I have just that genuine love for myself.
Okay. That's interesting. Do you think, whatever this question is, do you think knowing, you know, because, well, I know just for the listeners, I know that Karen is a metaphysician, okay? And so my question is specific to that knowledge. Do you think that the way you felt about yourself had anything to do with your being diagnosed?
Yeah, and that's really a hard question, because I would never have imagined in my life that I would have to deal with cancer. There was nobody in my family on mother or father's side has had cancer. So, you know, that in itself was just almost like unbelievable. But I'm just saying it had to have been something in me, you know, that I needed to work through. That's all I can come up with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without getting into, you know, reincarnation or anything like that, because that was the only way that I can understand why I had to go through this experience.
Okay, okay. I really appreciate that answer. You know, I really, really do appreciate it. It's really interesting because this is a, you know, you are such an example, a great example for others to follow. And, you know, we had a lesson today about thinking, you know, to watch every thought that we have, to make sure, to know that our thoughts, they go out and they come back to us, was the lesson that we heard today, you know, earlier today. And so as I think about that, when you immediately decided to be a survivor, that meant that your thought process held on to that. And that's what occurred for you, you know. So I'm looking at it that way, you know, as well as when you said when you had to make the decision to have both breasts removed versus the one that had the mass, you know, what the way you made that decision is, you know, it was a positive thought and you weren't going to think about anything else happening because it wasn't there, and for you to have it removed made it seem like you were, you know, you would be thinking that it might. So that, you know, that's real interesting how clear you were and how focused you were on being a survivor, you know. So that, as you know, in the International Black Summit, we have this distinction called acknowledgement. And so we would like to acknowledge you, Karen, for the work that you've done in becoming this great expression of God, this wonderful spiritual being. I hope the next time all the hosts are in town that they can meet you so that they can see what a pure spiritual being you are. So we would like to acknowledge you, you know, the International Summit Talk Show team. You were talking to Jill earlier, and Jerry, you heard, speak, and Glenn and Jakesha aren't on tonight. But we really, really appreciate the work that you've done to be able to share with women all over the world how they can be a survivor also. So let me just take a moment, Karen, if you would just hold on, to do to let people know this is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network, and to check in with Jerry or Jill to see if there's anyone else on the line. Okay. Karen, are you still there?
Yes.
Okay, Gio or Jerry? Okay. So we've had some real interesting technology stuff going on tonight, and I think it was because Blog Talk must not have, you know, we're guessing that it was something about the time that threw everything off, you know, because at 8 o'clock everything worked. You know, so they may not have done something with their time. I'm not sure what occurred there. But say it again.
Oh, this is Jill.
Okay. I was just checking, Jill, to see if there was anyone else on the switchboard.
We have a 323-392. You're live on the air. Do you have a comment? Okay, back to you, Henrietta.
Okay, thank you. Karen, I would like to ask this question. You know, when things like this happen, there's a loved one, whether it's a family member, a friend, or whatever, there are people who we always have this question, does she need anything, or does she, what is it that I can do to help, you know? And mm-hmm. if you can remember, and not if you can remember, but how would you have answered that question before, and how would you answer it now? You know, what was it that you needed?
Well, I really did need the support, you know, just hands down. I did not realize at the time how critical it was for me to have that support, because I was still trying to be, you know, this independent, black, strong woman that can take care of everything. After my surgery, and I did make it home, I'm still trying to be that strong black woman that just had surgery, but I can still get up and walk around and, you know, greet people that came over to see me, and I fell to my knees.
Mm.
And that's when it finally hit me that, yes, you do need the support, and you do need to allow people to help you, but you have to tell them how to help you. So,
That's good. And so, what were some of the ways that you told people or asked people how to help you?
Well, first, when I was in the hospital, you know, I needed to get up to go to the restroom, and my son was the only one in the room with me, and I'm trying to be, you know, big, strong mama, you know, and he's like, you know what, stop and just let me help you.
Okay.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's number one, you know, to cook for me, to rub my back, you know,
okay.
when I was in discomfort.
Okay.
You know, another incident was that I took a bath, and not realizing that I had lost so much strength in my arm that I could not lift myself out the tub.
Mm.
Yeah. So, you know, it comes. It's just not an automatic, you know, I need support here, there. I think it's just that your family just needs to understand that, you know, we do need support. And then we don't know quite what or how. It's just when we ask that, you know, someone is there.
Okay. Yeah, that's something, it's especially for a strong, independent woman.
Yeah.
To even have to ask for support. And then to not just ask, but then to allow someone to do what's needed.
Right.
And how old was your son at the time?
My son was, he was in his late 20s.
Oh, so he was an adult, right, okay.
Yeah, he was an adult, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. You know.
Okay. Yeah, that's really something. That's really something for people to understand that this is an allowing, and I can even see how, I can see why it would make you a different person. When you
yes.
had been so independent before.
Right.
And now you have to not only ask for things that you normally would do yourself, but then you have mm-hmm. to allow the people to do the things that you ask
right.
them to do.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And even to this day now, I'm accepting help instead
okay.
of just assuming that I can just do it all by myself. And
yeah.
more listening to my body, you know, and when my body, you know, gives me indications that I need to rest. That's what I do.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's really good. Something you didn't do before, right?
No, no, no. I just push until I pass out. You know, but I think one thing that I really would like to share to the listeners is that prior to my surgery, the head nurse, surgical nurse, she set me down and she said this is your life and you need to invest in your own living. So you do the research, you ask the questions. If you don't understand, you ask the questions. No matter how irritated the doctor gets, you keep asking the questions. And that's what I did. I would walk in there with my, you know, with my breast book, and the surgeon would go, "Oh, my goodness, what you got today? Yes, I got some questions."
Okay, good for you.
Henriette, I have a question. This is Jill. How are you?
Hi.
I have a question, and again, we want to thank you for our listeners. You're listening to the International Black Summit Radio Show, and we are on every Sunday evening, 8 Eastern Standard Time. I would like to know your mindset and how you were able to maintain this positive mindset and that's pretty much it. How were you able to maintain a positive mindset, and did you fall back sometimes and then have to kind of like, once you fall back or you felt sad or maybe even if you did, I'm not sure, went into a slight depression, how did you bring yourself out of that spiral, so to speak?
Okay, well, you're right. I mean, that is one thing. I wasn't like always 100% on, you know, I'm just so wonderful and I'm going to beat this. There were definite days, you know, that I was depressed, you know, and I would pray and I would read my spiritual books. I got, you know, Google out some spiritual books and just keep working with myself until I get out of that mindset. And yes, they came, you know, and the more you work with your inner self, your spirit, the less they came and the less intense they were. They're going to always come. But mm-hmm. And they still come today when I just want to, you know, feel like, oh me, oh my, why did I have to go through this? Why am I still going through this? They mm-hmm. still come.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that. Back to you, Henrietta.
So, Karen, just inside of that answer that you just gave, tell me how you deal with it. Like, if you don't mind sharing, like when the thought comes, how do you respond to it?
Well, when the thought comes, I generally have some what we call affirmations, mm-hmm. you know, that, you know, that I am healthy, I am whole, I am complete. So this does not define me.
This
does not define me. If I'm having one of those days and I'm still having my mammograms on my what we call my natural breasts, you know, and I was going through some stuff with that one and I just kept affirming, doesn't define me. This does not define me. I choose to live. So let's do it. I stopped taking the tamoxifen that's supposed to be as a preventive. And I said, I don't want anything masked. If it's out there, I want it to be revealed early so we can take care of it.
Mm.
So just, I guess, yeah. And, you know, sitting here talking about it, I did not realize that I was that positive and, you know, all of this stuff that I'm in my remembrance that's coming up, you know, it's like, wow, you know, you really was positive about it. Because some people tell me that. It's like my sister-in-law, she was like, you know, you told me you was going to have surgery like you was going to run to the store or something.
Okay. Yeah, that's why we acknowledge you, okay? Because this is, you know, we hear a lot on this radio program. And, you know, this is you are the exception that we want to make the rule. We want your story to be normal for people, you know. We want this to be the way that people handle it, you know, if they can, you know, and are willing to do this, to do the work. Because I know it wasn't easy, and I know as it might sound easy, I know to break through all of the statistics and especially if you were doing your research, you know, you're reading all about this and that, and you just broke through the crowd of whatever and stood firm on who you know yourself to be. And that's a wonderful testimony, you know. And so I would actually say, Karen, you are more independent now than you were before. It's just that your independence has been spiritualized. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, it's like standing on your two big spiritual feet.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, this, you know, this was a doozy. You know, I'm coming from a place that I really never had any major illness.
Right.
You know, the major illness I've had was two. I had a son, a baby. And I had pneumonia. But outside of that, I've really never had a major, you know, illness. So I guess it was more, no, this is not me.
Right.
You know, this is not me. No, I you know, I hear what you say, but, you know, okay, now what do I have to do so we can move past this?
Mm-hmm.
And no, it wasn't easy. I'm not, you know, I don't want to sit here and say, you know, it was easy, it was a piece of cake. No, it was very difficult. I was in a lot of discomfort, a lot of pain, you know, just a whole lot of, you know, emotionally I was drained. You know, my relationship broke up over it. You know, a lot of things, but, you know, all in all, at the end, I'm still here.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So that's the goal, is to keep living.
This is Jill again. I have another question. I have a friend that informed me last Christmas that she has stage 4 cancer, breast cancer, and it has now gone to her stomach. And she and for the past year, we've been trying to hook up. I've offered to take her to some of her appointments, and and she will, once in a blue moon, she'll call me back, but she's really keeping me away. She said that, you know, she has lost her hair and she looks different, and she was really into, I mean, when she stepped out, you know, she stepped out, makeup flawless, you know, almost too done, but, you know, everyone knew that was how she is. And she kind of, like, pushed me away, and I'm wondering, should I keep, you know, calling her? I don't want to bug her anymore, but it's like she doesn't return the phone calls anymore, and I am concerned.
Yeah, I think now what you can probably do is that just call and leave a message and just say, whatever you need, I'm here. If you need somebody to cry with, I'm here. If you need somebody to go to your appointments with you, I'm here. Just and I think that brings so much comfort to know that a person is there if they need to reach out. But we would, you know, at that point, you know, we don't want to bother you know, my the boyfriend that went through me with my cancer, I found out a couple of years later that he had it and he had never told me. He had throat cancer and he died from it and he had never told me, but he pushed me away.
Wow. Okay.
You know, so that, you know, that's just a personal choice, and we, you know, have to just accept, you know, that person's choice.
Because this is Jerry. I know my grandmother was, you know, she, one day my mother called me. She said, she just want to talk to you. And I said, well, me and my grandma was never really close, but we, you know, we love each other, but, you know, she had a favorite, you know. Like our grandma, she said, she just want to talk to you. And she said, I just want to tell you that I'm proud of you. So, and she just said, everything that I did to you, I'm sorry. And you grew up to be a fine young man. And I want you, and I said, this is going to be my one of my last things that I'm going to tell you. And you know what she said? I said, Grandma, I always gonna love you. Just tell me what I need, what you need, and I'm there. And she said, I want you all day. We say what's on your mind, and I just want to talk. I don't want to talk to nobody else. I just want to talk to you. I just want you to know that I appreciate you. And I said, it's gonna have to be take up to you. You know, keep the family together. And I said, hold up, you know, Grandma, you know.
Right.
And I said, listen, Grandma, you know, ain't nobody listening to me because, you know, I come from a headstrong family. and I'm the oldest. This is how it's going to go. That's how it was going. She said, don't tell you about that. Don't worry about that. Your mother is going to need your strength. She's going to need somebody that is humble, that is strong. And I'm looking for you to push it out there. And it really moved me because everything what she was saying was happening, it happened. And I said, oh, look, this is how it's going to be. We're going to follow what Grandma said, and that's it. And I just remember that. And I knew she was dying. But at the same time, I had to keep myself composed with the family, especially my mother. So, you know, for me, you know, it was a touching moment to just talk to my grandma for knowing the last three hours of her life. And, you know, dealing with cancer, family don't understand, especially African Americans, when we deal with cancer, it's different, you know, because at times the family get close together. Sometimes it's sad to be that way, but it really is. That's why I always tell people all the time, wherever you have a life, appreciate it. Because you never know, it might snap out of you and back at you, Jill. Here we are.
That's true.
Thank you. Thank you. Henrietta, you had a comment before my comment?
I was thinking about, we talked about the diagnosis, the support, and we touched on the change of diet. And it was interesting because you said you were way underweight before the diagnosis. And that you were not a healthy eater. So tell us, how you changed your diet.
Well, first off, I was a smoker, too.
A smoker?
Okay. Yeah,
okay.
I was smoking before the diagnosis. I would always call myself just the opposite of what a heavy person, you know. When they stress, they would eat. When I stressed, I wouldn't eat. And so I could go for days without eating. So when I when I got diagnosed, I knew I was very unhealthy. Even though, you know, I was slim and trim, mm-hmm. I knew that I would not be able to make it through a surgery.
Mm.
Yes, I knew that. So what I says is, I'm going to wake up, okay? So I started eating chicken and fish and vegetables and drinking Ensure and salads. And I ate none of that.
Mm.
You know, I had a hamburger here and there and french fries and, you know, just all of the garbage food was what I was eating. And I did that for 3 months because I got diagnosed in December. My surgery was in March. And I just said I changed. I stopped smoking. And it was ironic that it was so easy to stop smoking because the reconstruction surgeon said that he wouldn't do it if I was still smoking. So it only took me 2 weeks to stop smoking, which it took me, you know, 15 years of trying.
Mm.
Yeah, 2 weeks. I just, you know, had a bad day. I said, okay, this was a bad day. I slipped, you know, and then I said, okay, you start again tomorrow. That was started. And I did that for like 2 weeks, and then, you know, I was finally overcame it. So, and that's what I tell people today when they're trying to stop smoking. I say, don't beat yourself up. If you smoke, okay, fine. Then start again the next day. If you smoke one or two, that's fine. Start again the next day. So that's it. I mean, and I, you know, I still try to eat healthy. I'm not always successful. But I knew it was essential in order for me to make it through my surgery. So I did it.
Mm. All right, very good. We got about 6 more minutes left. If anybody want to join us, Jerome, after the show, that number is 218-862-6420. The PIN number is 79748-34#. So after the show, you want to join the Oxygen Room, I will read the number out in another 3 more minutes. And back at you, Jill and Henry and Tom.
Thank you, Jerry. I did pick up on one thing you stated in regards to eating healthy before the surgery. And a lot of people that I've spoken with, they were eating healthy after the surgery. Can you touch a little bit? We have about 5 more minutes, but just the importance of eating healthy before the surgery.
Well, my position on that was that, like I said, because I was probably only 120 pounds soaking wet, and you know, I was not able to gain weight at all. No matter what I did for the last 15, 20 years, I wasn't able to gain weight. I knew I was very unhealthy because of my eating habits. They were horrible. And with just the combination of me being unhealthy, being underweight, you know, almost malnutrition, you know, I said, this is not a good way to go into a surgery. I need some substance on me that, if anything go wrong, I still have a fighting chance. I felt that I didn't have a fighting chance the way that I was presently.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's something that you kind of took on your own, or did you read about that? Because, again, a lot of people don't think like that.
No, I took that on my own. Well, see, for as long as I can remember, I've always been a small person, and I've never... Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about dieting or eating right because I've never gained weight.
Mm-hmm.
I was a swing between 120 and 130 since high school. So, you know, I had developed this habit of just eating at the wrong times, and I'm doing all of this trying to gain weight, and it became such a habit, you know, that it's like, okay, well, you know, you're still 120 pounds, you know, you just don't have nothing in you. There's, you know, no substance, no nutrition, no nothing, you know. So surgery is a very serious thing, which I had never gone through surgery either. So I was just trying to put all of my ducks and give me a better fighting chance to come out of it. Because I just kept saying, you got to wake up to get up to start your life over. So do what you got to do so you can wake up and get up and start your life over.
Wow. That was great. Henrietta, first, I just want to thank you so much for sharing your story. This was powerful, and we know this is going to touch a lot of listeners. Yeah. Henrietta, we have about 2 minutes, 47 seconds.
Okay. Thank you, Gio. Thank you, Jerry. Karen, I just, the next time I see you, I will probably hug you. Okay? So just be prepared.
Okay.
I always hug you when I see you, but it will be a little different this time. You know, I just can't even tell you. I'm just sitting here like, what? You know, I mean, what a wonderful.
I haven't really shared my story, so this is like, really great for me because, you know, this is a healing process for me to be able to sit here and share.
Yeah. And it's a healing process for us as well, you know, because we only have a few minutes. First, I would like to invite you back because we're doing this for the next 2 weeks, and there will be other survivors on in the next 2 weeks, next Sunday and the Sunday after that. Also, I want to say that the oxygen room that you heard Jerry talk about is a conference call number that we go to after the show to continue the conversation. Because there are a lot of times there are people on the show who don't want to speak. Okay, so we go to the oxygen room and they're comfortable talking in the oxygen room. Third is that this program is archived. So you can go back, Karen, and listen to this program by going to blogtalkradio.com. And and just like you went earlier, and you can just click on this date, at it'll say 8 p.m. Central Time because it was an hour difference. But you can also go to blacksummit.org and click on talk show, and it will replay the most recent show, which now will be this show. So there's several ways that you will be able to listen to it so you can kind of review it. So if there's anything else that you find you'd like to talk about next week, you can talk about it next week. We thank you so very much. I mean, just so very much. And it was worth every 60 minutes that we had to wait to get into this show, you know. Truly it was divine timing. That we kept trying, and Jerry in New York could get in, and we could not get in. I couldn't get in Chicago. Jill couldn't get in Atlanta. So it was just exactly what it needed to be because Karen called me. So I just thank you. I just can't say thank you enough, but we need to end this program and go to the oxygen room. Jerry, will you give us the number one more time, please?
The number is 218-862-6420. Access code is 797-4834#.
Okay.
Okay. 218-862-6240. And the access code is 797-4834#. Thank you, Jerry. Karen, thank you so much. Jill, thank you so much. And for all the Glenn and, you know, who tried to help us get in as well. Thank you, everyone, for your consciousness, for all the listeners, for the people who will listen another time. And we have a lot of archive listeners who at, you know, at 7 o'clock were on listening and couldn't get in. So they will go back and listen to the show. So, Karen, thank you once again.
You
please come back and join us in the oxygen room if you can. And
okay.
And we'll talk to everyone next week. Good night.
Good night.